1660, verses 1 and 2. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elazar, Kedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goim, that they made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemember, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, this is Zoar. It came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elazar, Kedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goim, signifies so many kinds of apparent goods and truths, which in themselves are not goods and truths in the Lord's external man. Each of the kings and each of the nations signifies some such good and truth. They made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemember, king of Zeboam, and the king of Bela, this is Zoar. Signifies so many kinds of cupidities of evil and of persuasions of falsity, against which the Lord combated. 1661. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elazar, Kedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goim, that these signify so many kinds of apparent goods and truths, which in themselves are not goods and truths that were in the Lord's external man, may be seen from the signification of all these in the internal sense, and also from what follows. For the Lord's combat against evils and falsities is treated of. Here his first combat, which took place in his childhood and earliest youth, which he then first engaged in and sustained when he had been imbued with sciences and cognitions, on which account it is here said, in the days of these. No one can ever fight against evils and falsities until he has learned to know what evil and falsity are, and therefore not until he has been instructed. A man does not know what evil is, still less what falsity is, until he has the full use of his understanding and judgment, which is the reason why a man does not come into temptations until he has arrived at adult age. Thus every man in his age of manhood, but the Lord in his childhood. Every man combats first of all from the goods and truths he has received through cognitions, and from them and by them he judges about evils and falsities. Every man also, when he first begins to combat, supposes that the goods and truths from which he combats are his own. That is, he attributes them to himself, and at the same time attributes to himself the power by which he resists. This also is permitted, for the man cannot then know otherwise. Until a man has been regenerated, he cannot possibly know so as to be able to say that he knows, acknowledges, and believes that nothing of good and truth is from himself, but that all good and truth are from the Lord, or that he cannot resist any evil and falsity from his own power, for he does not know that evil spirits excite and infuse the evils and falsities, still less that by means of evil spirits he is in communication with hell, and that hell presses upon him as the sea does upon every part of a dike, which pressure of hell no man can possibly resist by his own powers. But as until he has been regenerated, a man cannot but suppose that he resists by his own powers, this also is permitted, and thus he is introduced into combats or temptations. But afterwards he is more and more enlightened. When a man is in such a state that he supposes good and truth to be from himself, and that the power of resisting is his own, then the goods and truths from which he combats against evils and falsities are not goods and truths, although they appear so. For there is what is his own in them, and he places self-merit in victory, and glories as if it were he who had overcome the evil and falsity, when yet it is the Lord alone who combats and overcomes. That this is really the case, none can know but those who are being regenerated by means of temptations. And as in his earliest childhood the Lord was introduced into most grievous combats against evils and falsities, neither could he at that time suppose otherwise. And this not only because it was according to divine order that his human essence should be introduced to the divine essence, and be united to it by means of continual combats and victories, but also because the goods and truths from which he combated against evils and falsities were of the external man. And as these goods and truths were not altogether divine, they are therefore called appearances of good and truth. His divine essence introduced his human in this manner, in order that it might overcome from its own power. But there are more arcana here than can possibly be described. In a word, in the first combats, the goods and truths in the Lord from which he combated were imbued with things inherited from the mother. And so far as they were imbued with things inherited from the mother, they were not divine. But by degrees, as he overcame the evil and falsity, they were purified and made divine. 1662. That each of the kings and each of the nations signifies such good and such truth is evident from their signification in the internal sense, as applied to the subject here treated of. For every nation and every land signifies some certain thing in general, and this both in the proper and in the opposite sense. But the general signification applies itself to the subject being treated of. That apparent goods and truths are signified by the names of these kings and these nations can be confirmed by many passages. But as this has been done so many times before, and as so many names occur here, it would be too tedious thus to explain them all one by one. 1663. They made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemember, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, this is Zoar. That these signify so many kinds of cupidities of evil and of persuasions of falsity against which the Lord fought may also be seen from the signification of the kings and nations here named, and also from what follows. What cupidity of evil and what persuasion of falsity is signified by each one, it would also be too tedious to set forth. Of the signification of Sodom and Gomorrah, of Admah and Zeboim, and of Zoar, we have already briefly treated. They are the most general or the most universal kinds of evils and falsities. And these, being signified in the internal sense, here follow in their series. that the Lord underwent and endured the most grievous temptations, temptations more grievous than have ever been endured by anyone, is not so well known from the Word, where it is only mentioned that he was in the wilderness 40 days and was tempted by the devil. The temptations themselves which he then had are described in a few words only, but these few involve them all, as that it is said in Mark 1, verses 12 and 13, that he was there with the beasts, by which are signified the worst of the infernal crew, and the things that are mentioned, that he was taken by the devil upon the pinnacles of the temple and upon a high mountain, are nothing but representatives of most grievous temptations which he had in the wilderness, concerning which of the Lord's divine mercy more will be said hereafter. That the wars here mentioned signify in the internal sense nothing but spiritual wars or temptations was said above at the beginning of this chapter. By the wars mentioned in the Word, especially in the prophets, nothing else is signified. The wars of men can have no place in the internals of the Word, for such things are not spiritual and celestial, such as alone belong to the Word. That combats with the devil, or what is the same with hell, are signified by the wars mentioned in the Word, may be seen from the passages that now follow, besides many others. In John, they are spirits of demons doing signs to go forth to the kings of the earth and of the whole world, to gather them together unto the war of that great day of God Almighty. Revelation 16, verse 14. Here everyone can see that no other war is signified on the great day of God Almighty. Again, the beast that cometh up out of the abyss shall make war. Revelation 11, verse 7. Here the abyss is hell. Again, the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, who keep the commandments of God, and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Revelation 12, verse 17. Again, it was given unto him to make war with the saints. Revelation 13, verse 7. All these wars are combats such as are those of temptations. The wars of the kings of the south and of the north, and the other wars mentioned in Daniel 10 and 11, also the things said of Michael, Daniel 10, verses 13 and 21, 12, verse 1, Revelation 12, verse 7, mean the same. That wars signify nothing else is evident also from the other prophets, as in Ezekiel. Ye have not gone up into the breaches, neither have ye built up the fence for the house of Israel, to stand in the war in the day of Yahuwah. 13, verse 5. Here this is said concerning the prophets. In Isaiah, they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. 2, verse 4. Here it is plain that no other wars are meant, and consequently, that by the weapons of war, as by swords, spears, shields, and other things, nothing else is meant in the Word but the things that pertain to such wars. Again in Isaiah, "Bring ye water to him that is thirsty. Ye inhabitants of the land of Temah, meet with his bread him that is wandering. For they shall wander before the swords, before the drawn sword, and before the bent bow, and before the grievousness of war." 21 verses 14 and 15. In Jeremiah, "Shepherds and their flocks shall come unto the daughter of Zion. They shall pitch their tents against her round about. They shall feed every one upon his own space. Sanctify a war against her. Arise, and let us go up at noon." 6 verses 3 to 5. Here no other war is meant, for it is against the daughter of Zion, that is, the church. Again, "How is the city of praise not forsaken, the city of my joy? Therefore her young men shall fall in her streets, and all the men of war shall be cut off in that day." 49 verses 25 and 26. The city of praise and of joy denotes the things which belong to the church, the men of war, those who combat. In Hosea, "In that day will I make a covenant for them with the wild beast of the field, and with the fowl of the heavens, and with the creeping thing of the ground. And I will break the bow and the sword and war out of the land, and will make them to lie down in confidence." 2 verse 18. Here in like manner, war denotes combats, and the various arms of war, those things which pertain to spiritual combat. These are broken when cupidities and falsities cease, and the man comes into the tranquility of peace. In David, "Behold the works of Yahuwah, who hath made solitudes in the earth, making wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow, and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariots in fire." Psalm 46, verses 8 and 9. Here the meaning is similar. Again, "In Salem is the habitation of God, and his dwelling place in Zion. There he brake the fiery shafts of the bow, the shield, and the sword, and the war." Psalm 76, verses 2 and 3. As the priests represented the Lord, who alone combats for man, their service is called warfare. Numbers 4, verses 23, 35, 39, 43, 47. That Yahuwah alone, that is the Lord, combats and overcomes the devil that is with man when he is in the combats of temptations, although it does not so appear to the man, is a constant truth. For not even the smallest thing can be brought upon a man by evil spirits that is not by permission, and nothing, however small, can be averted by angels except from the Lord. So that it is the Lord alone who sustains all combat and who overcomes, which also is everywhere represented by the wars waged by the sons of Israel against the nations. That it is the Lord alone is also declared in Moses. Yahuwah your God, who walketh before you, he shall fight for you. Deuteronomy 1, verse 30. Again, Yahuwah your God is he that walketh with you, to fight for you against your enemies, to save you. Deuteronomy 20, verse 4. So too in Joshua, as chapter 23, verses 3 and 5. For all the wars there that were carried on against the idolatrous inhabitants of the land of Canaan represented the Lord's combats with hell, and consequently those of his church, and those of the men of his church. This also accords with the following words in Isaiah. As the lion roareth, and the young lion over his prey, when a multitude of shepherds come running against him, he will not be dismayed at their voice, nor afflicted by their tumult. So Yehovah Zebaoth shall come down to fight upon Mount Zion, and upon the hill thereof. 31, verse 4. For this reason also, Yehovah, or the Lord, is also called a man of war. As in Moses, Yehovah is a man of war. Yehovah is his name. Exodus 15, verse 3. And in Isaiah, Yehovah shall go forth as a hero. He shall stir up zeal like a man of wars. He shall cry, yea, he shall shout aloud. He shall prevail against his enemies. 42, verse 13. This also is why many things that pertain to war are attributed to the Lord, as here to cry and shout aloud. Spirits and angels also appear as men of war when a representation is made, as in Joshua. Joshua lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him, and his sword drawn in his hand. And he said unto Joshua, I am the prince of Yehovah's army. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth. 5, verses 13 and 14. These things were thus seen because they were representative, and for the same reason the posterity of Jacob called their wars the wars of Yehovah. The same also was the case in the ancient churches, and among them were books which also were called the Wars of Yehovah, as is evident in Moses. It is said in the book of the Wars of Yehovah, Numbers 21, verses 14 and 15. This was written in a manner not unlike that in which wars are treated of in this chapter. But the wars of the church were signified. Such a mode of writing was familiar in those times, for then there were interior men, and they thought of exalted things. Numbers 1:665, verse 3. All these were gathered together at the valley of Siddim. This is the Salt Sea. All these were gathered together at the Valley of Siddim. Signifies that they were in the unclean things of cupidities. This is the Salt Sea. Signifies the filthy things of the derivative falsities. 1666. All these were gathered together at the Valley of Siddim. That this signifies that they were in the unclean things of cupidities may be seen from the signification of the Valley of Siddim, concerning which see below at verse 10, where it is said that the Valley of Siddim was pits of bitumen, that is, that it was full of pits of bitumen, by which are signified the foul and unclean things of cupidities. See number 1299. The same may be seen from the fact that by Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboim were signified the cupidities of evil and the persuasions of falsity, which in themselves are unclean. That they are unclean may be seen by everyone within the church, and it also is actually seen in the other life. Such spirits desire nothing better than to pass their time in marshy, boggy, and excrementitious places, so that their nature carries such things with it. Such unclean things sensibly exhale from them when they approach the sphere of good spirits, especially when they desire to infest the good, that is, to gather together to attack them. From this it is evident what the Valley of Siddim is, that this is the salt sea signifies the filthy things of the derivative falsities, may be seen from the signification of the salt sea, which is, as it were, the same as that of the Valley of Siddim. For it is said, the Valley of Siddim, this is the salt sea. But these words are added for the reason that the salt sea signifies the falsities which burst forth from cupidities. For there cannot possibly be any cupidity that does not produce falsities. The life of cupidities may be likened to a coal fire, and the falsities to the obscure light from it. As there cannot be fire without light, so neither can there be cupidity without falsity. All cupidity is from some foul love, for that which is loved is desired, and hence is called cupidity. And in cupidity itself there is the love in question in its continuity. Whatever favors or assents to this love or cupidity is called falsity. Hence it is evident why the words the salt sea are here added to the words the Valley of Siddim. As cupidities and falsities are what vastate or lay waste a man, that is, deprive him of all the life of the love of good and of the affection of truth, vastation is described in many passages by saltness, as in Jeremiah. He that maketh flesh his arm shall be like a bare shrub in the desert, and shall not see when good cometh, and shall inhabit the parched places in the wilderness, a salt land and not inhabited. 17 verses 5 and 6. In Ezekiel, the miry places thereof and the marshes thereof shall not be healed. They shall be given up to salt. 47 verse 11. In David, Yahuwah turneth rivers into a wilderness, and water springs into drought, a fruitful land into one of saltness, for the wickedness of them that dwell therein. Psalm 107, verses 33 and 34. In Zephaniah, Moab shall be as Sodom, and the sons of Ammon as Gomorrah, a place left to the nettle, and a pit of salt, and a desolation forever. 2 verse 9. In Moses, the whole land is brimstone and salt, a burning. It shall not be sown, and shall not sprout, neither shall any herb spring up in it, as in the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, of Admah and Zeboim. Deuteronomy 29, verse 23. The whole land brimstone and salt, a burning, denotes vastated goods and truths. Brimstone, the vastation of good. Salt, the vastation of truth. For parching and saltness destroy the land and the products of the land, just as cupidity destroys goods, and as falsity destroys truths. As salt was significative of devastation, it was also customary to sow with salt the cities which were destroyed, that they might not be rebuilt. See Judges 9, verse 45. Salt is used also in the opposite sense, signifying that which gives fertility, and, as it were, relish. Verse 4. 12 years they served Kedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. 12 years they served Kedorlaomer signifies that the evils and falsities did not appear in childhood, but that they served the apparent goods and truths. And in the 13th year they rebelled signifies the beginning of temptations in childhood. 1667. 12 years they served Kedorlaomer. That this signifies that the evils and falsities did not appear in childhood, but that they served the apparent goods and truths, is evident from the representation and signification of Kedorlaomer, and also of those who served, as explained above, verse 1. And also from the signification of 12. Kedorlaomer, together with those named above, verse 2, signifies the apparent goods and truths in the Lord. Thus is external man in respect to these things. Kedorlaomer here denotes all that are named above, verse 2, in the complex, as is evident also from what follows, as also from the circumstance that he was king of Elam, the signification of which has been given already, as being faith from charity. Hear therefore truth and good. For faith and the things of faith are nothing but truths, and charity and the things of charity are goods. But here the goods of infancy, which although they appear good, are not good so long as hereditary evil contaminates them. That which is inherent and which adheres is from the love of self and the love of the world. Whatever is of the love of self and of the love of the world then appears as good, but is not good. But still it is to be called good, so long as it is in an infant or a child, who does not yet know what is truly good. The ignorance excuses, and the innocence makes it appear as good. But the case is different when the man has been instructed and knows what good and evil are. Such good and truth as are in a child before he has been instructed are signified by Kedorlaomer. By their serving 12 years is signified all the time that there are such good and truth. For in the internal sense, 12 signifies all things that pertain to the faith of charity, or to faith from charity, much the same as Elam. Genesis 10, verse 22. And so long as such good and truth are in a man, whether it be in his childhood or at any other age, evils and falsities can affect nothing. That is, evil spirits do not venture to do anything or to introduce any evil, as is evident with infants, well-disposed children, and the simple in heart, with whom, even though evil spirits or the worst of the diabolical crew were present, they could affect nothing at all, but are in subjection, which is here signified by their serving Kedorlaomer 12 years. The reason of their being then in subjection and serving is that the man has not yet acquired to himself a sphere of cupidities and falsities. For evil spirits and genii are not allowed to operate except into those things which a man has procured to himself by his acts, and not into those which are from heredity. And therefore, before the man procures such spheres to himself, the evil spirits serve. But as soon as he procures them, they pour themselves in upon him and endeavor to rule. For they are then in his very sphere, and find there a certain delight, or their very life. Where the carcass is, there are the eagles. 1668. And in the 13th year they rebelled. That this signifies the beginning of temptations in childhood is evident from the signification of the 13th year and from the signification of rebelling. The 13th year is intermediate between the 12th and the 14th. What is signified by 12 has been stated, and what by 14 will be stated presently. The intermediate between no temptation and temptation is 13. What rebelling signifies may be seen when it is predicated of the evils in a man or of evil spirits, when they have been in subjection or are serving and begin to rise up and infest. Evils or evil spirits rebel in proportion as the man who desires to be in good and truth confirms in himself any evils and falsities. That is, in proportion as cupidities and falsities insinuate themselves into his goods and truths. In cupidities and falsities is the life of evil spirits, and in goods and truths is the life of angels. And hence come infestation and combat. This takes place with all who have conscience, and much more was it the case with the Lord when a child who had perception. With those who have conscience, there arises therefrom a dull pain, but with those who have perception, a sharp one. And the more interior the perception is, the sharper is the pain. From this we may see what was the nature of the Lord's temptation in comparison with that of men, for he had interior and inmost perception. 1669, verse 5. And in the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him, and smote the Rephaim in Ashtaroth Karnaim, and the Zuzim in Ham, and the Emim in Shaveh Kiriathaim. In the 14th year signifies the first temptation. Came Chedorlaomer, signifies the apparent good in the external man, and the kings that were with him, signifies the apparent truth which is of that good. And smote the Rephaim in Ashtaroth Karnaim, and the Zuzim in Ham, and the Emim in Shaveh Kiriathaim. Signifies the persuasions of falsity, or the hells of such, which the Lord conquered. 1670. In the 14th year, that this signifies the first temptation may be seen from the signification of 14, or the end of the second week, concerning which, see above, number 728, where the time of 7 days, or of 1 week, signifies the beginning of temptation. 14, or the term of 2 weeks, signifies the same. It is here said, in the 14th year, in reference to the 12 years which precede, by which, as before said, is signified the time of childhood. 1671. Came Chedorlaomer. That this signifies the apparent good in the external man is evident from the signification of Kedar Laomer, explained in the preceding verse, as being apparent good and truth. Here it signifies good only, because it is said also, and the kings that were with him, by whom is signified the truth. 1672. And the kings that were with him. That this signifies the apparent truth which is of that good is evident from the signification of kings in the word. Kings, kingdoms, and peoples in the historical and the prophetical parts of the word signify truths and the things which belong to truths, as may be abundantly confirmed. In the word, an accurate distinction is made between a people and a nation. By a people are signified truths, and by a nation, goods, as before shown. Number 1258, 1260. Kings are predicated of peoples, but not so much of nations. Before the sons of Israel desired kings, they were a nation and represented good, or the celestial. But after they desired a king and received one, they became a people, and did not represent good or the celestial, but truth or the spiritual, which was the reason why this was imputed to them as a fault. See First Book of Samuel 8, verses 7 to 22, concerning which subject of the Lord's divine mercy more will be said elsewhere. As Kedar Laomer is named here, and it is added, the kings that were with him, both good and truth are signified. By Kedar Laomer, good, and by the kings, truth. But what was the quality of the good and truth at the beginning of the Lord's temptations has been stated above. 1673. And smote the Rephaim in Ashtaroth-Karnaim, and the Zuzim in Ham, and the Emim in Shaveh-Kiriathaim. That this signifies the persuasions of falsity, or the hells of such, which the Lord conquered, is evident from the signification of the Rephaim, the Zuzim, and the Emim, as being of similar kind with the Nephilim, who are mentioned in Genesis 6, verse 4. And in the exposition of that passage, see number 581, it was sufficiently and abundantly shown that by the Nephilim are signified persuasions of falsity, or those who from a persuasion of their own exaltation and preeminence have made nothing of all holy and true things, and who have infused falsities into their cupidities, as is also plain from the passages there adduced. Numbers 13, verse 33. Deuteronomy 2, verses 10 and 11. Isaiah 14, verse 9. 26, verses 14 and 19. Psalm 88, verse 10. The different kinds of persuasions of falsity are what are here signified by these three, and by the Horites in Mount Seir. For there are many kinds of persuasions of falsity, not only according to the falsities, but also according to the cupidities to which they are adjoined, or into which they are infused, or from which they flow forth and are produced. The quality of these persuasions of falsity can never appear to any man, who scarcely knows more than that there is such a thing as persuasion of falsity and cupidity of evil. But in the other life, they are most distinctly arranged into their genera and into their species. The most direful persuasions of falsity existed with those who lived before the flood, especially with those who were called Nephilim. These Nephilim are of such a character that in the other life they, by their persuasions, take away from the spirits to whom they come all faculty of thinking, so that these spirits seem to themselves scarcely to live, much less to be able to think anything true. For, as before shown, there is in the other life a communication of the thoughts of all. And therefore, when such a persuasiveness flows in, it cannot but, as it were, kill all power of thought in others. Such were the wicked tribes against whom the Lord combated in his earliest childhood, and whom he conquered. And unless the Lord had conquered them by his coming into the world, not a man would have been left at this day upon the earth. For every man is governed by the Lord through spirits. These same Nephilim are at this day enclosed by their fantasies in what seems like a misty rock, out of which they are continually striving, but in vain, to rise up, concerning whom, see number 1265 to 1272, and in many other places above. These and others like them were also meant in Isaiah. The dead shall not live, the Rephaim shall not rise, because thou hast visited and hast destroyed them, and hast made all their memory to perish. 26, verse 14. Also in David, wilt thou show a wonder to the dead? Shall the Rephaim arise and praise thee? 88, verse 10. Here by the dead are not meant the dead, but the damned. There are also those at this day, especially from the Christian world, who likewise have persuasions, but not so direful as the antediluvians had. There are certain persuasions of falsity which take possession of both the will part and the intellectual part of man. Such were those of the antediluvians, and of those who are here signified by the Rephaim, the Zuzim, and the Emim. But there are other persuasions of falsity which take possession of the intellectual part only, and which arise from the principles of falsity that are confirmed in oneself. These are not so powerful nor so deadly as the former, but still they cause much annoyance to spirits in the other life, and take away in part their ability to think. Spirits of this kind excite in a man nothing but confirmations of what is false, so that the man sees no otherwise than that falsity is truth and evil good. It is their sphere which is of such a character. As soon as anything of truth is called forth by angels, they suffocate and extinguish it. A man can perceive whether he is governed by such as these simply by observing whether he thinks the truths of the word to be false, and confirms himself so that he cannot see otherwise. If such be the case, he may be sufficiently certain that such spirits are with him, and that they have the dominion. In like manner, those who persuade themselves that their private advantage is the common good, and who regard nothing as being for the common good, but what is also to their own advantage. In this case also, the evil spirits who are present suggest so many things in confirmation that they see no otherwise. Those who are such that they regard every advantage to themselves as the common good, or who veil it over with the appearance of being the common good, do much the same in the other life in regard to the common good there. That such is the nature of the influx of spirits with man, it has been given me to know by continual experience to the life. 1674, verse 6. And the Horites in their Mount Seir, even to El Paran, which is over in the wilderness. The Horites in their Mount Seir, signifies the persuasions of falsity that are from the love of self. Even to El Paran, which is over in the wilderness, signifies their extension. 1675. The Horites in their Mount Seir. That this signifies the persuasions of falsity that are from the love of self is evident from the signification of the Horites and from the signification of Seir. As regards the Horites, they were those who dwelt in Mount Seir, as is evident from Genesis 36, verses 8, 20, etc., where Esau is spoken of, who is called Edom. By Esau or Edom, in the genuine sense, is signified the Lord as to his human essence, and he is also represented by Esau or Edom, as may be seen from many passages of the word, both historical and prophetical, concerning which, of the Lord's divine mercy, more will be said hereafter. And as those who are in persuasions of falsity were represented by the Horites, and as at that time representatives came forth into actual realization, therefore, the driving out of the Horites from Mount Seir by the descendants of Esau had a similar representation. Of this it is said in Moses. That also is accounted a land of Rephaim. Rephaim dwelt there aforetime, and the Ammonites called them Zamzumim, a people great and many, and tall as the Anakim. And Yehowah destroyed them from before them, and they had them in possession, and dwelt in their place. As he did for the sons of Esau that dwelt in Seir, that he destroyed the Horites from before them, and they had them in possession, and dwelt in their place. Deuteronomy 2, verses 20 to 22. These things represent and signify the same as what is here related concerning Chedorlaomer, namely that Chedorlaomer and the kings with him smote the Horites in Mount Seir. For by Chedorlaomer, as before said, are represented the Lord's good and truth in his childhood. Thus the Lord's human essence in respect to good and truth at that time, by which he destroyed the persuasions of falsity, that is, the hells filled with such a crew of the devil that attempted to destroy the world of spirits, and consequently the human race by persuasions of falsity. And as Esau or Edom represented the Lord in respect to his human essence, Mount Seir also and Paran represented the things that belong to his human essence, namely the celestial things of love. This is evident from the blessing of Moses. Yehowah came from Sinai and arose to them from Seir. He shone forth from Mount Paran, and he came from the 10,000s of holiness. From his right hand was a fire of law unto them. Yea, he loveth the peoples. Deuteronomy 33, verses 2 and 3. That Yehowah arose from Mount Seir and shone forth from Mount Paran signifies nothing else than the Lord's human essence. Everyone may know that to rise from Mount Seir and to shine forth from Mount Paran signifies neither mountains nor their inhabitants, but divine realities. Thus the celestial things of the Lord's human essence, of which it is predicated that Yehowah arose and shone forth from it. That Seir has this signification is evident from the song of Deborah and Barak in the book of Judges. O Yehowah, when thou wentest forth out of Seir, when thou departest out of the field of Edom, the earth trembled, the heavens also dropped, yea, the clouds dropped waters, the mountains flowed down. this Sinai before Yahuwah, the God of Israel. 5:4-5. Here to go forth out of Seir and to depart out of the field of Edom have no other signification. This is even more manifest in the prophecy of Balaam, who was one of the sons of the east or from Syria, where there was a remnant of the ancient church, as given in Moses. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not nigh. There shall arise a star out of Jacob, and a sepulchre shall rise up out of Israel. And Edom shall be an inheritance. Seir also shall be an inheritance, belonging to his enemies. Numbers 24:17-18. Here to see him, but not now, to behold him, but not nigh, is the Lord's coming into the world, whose human essence is called a star out of Jacob, which is to arise, and also Edom and Seir. That Edom and Seir were not to be the inheritance is plain to everyone. That Seir, belonging to his enemies, or the mountain of his enemies, should be an inheritance, means the same as in many other places where it is said that the enemies were to be expelled and their land possessed. That Mount Paran also, or El Paran, named in this verse, signifies the same, is evident likewise in Habakkuk. God will come from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. His honor covered the heavens, and the earth was filled with his praise. 3:3. But it is to be known that mountains and lands have and take a signification from those who inhabit them, from the Horites when the Horites dwelt there, and when these were expelled, from those who expelled them, as from Esau or Edom, and also from other sources. And therefore the signification exists in two senses, the genuine and the opposite. In the genuine, the places in question denote the Lord's human essence. In the opposite, the love of self. The Lord's human essence is celestial love itself, and the opposite to celestial love is the love of self. So the Horites here signify the persuasions of falsity from the love of self. There are persuasions of falsity from the love of self, and there are persuasions of falsity from the love of the world. The persuasions that are from the love of self are most foul, but the persuasions from the love of the world are not so foul. The persuasions of falsity from the love of self are the opposites of the celestial things of love. But the persuasions of falsity from the love of the world are the opposites of the spiritual things of love. Persuasions from the love of self carry with them a desire to exercise command over all things. And so far as restraints are relaxed to them, they rush on, even to desire to exercise command over the universe and even over Yahuwah himself, as has been shown. Therefore, persuasions of this kind are not tolerated in the other life. But persuasions from the love of the world do not rush on so far, but only to the insanity of not being contented with one's lot. They vainly affect a celestial joy and desire to appropriate the goods of others, but not so much with a disposition to exercise command. But the differences that exist among these persuasions are innumerable. 1:6-7:6. Even to El Paran, which is in the wilderness. That this signifies their extension may be seen from the fact that the Horites were smitten and were compelled to flee thus far. The wilderness of Paran is mentioned in Genesis 21, verse 21, Numbers 10, verse 12, 12, verse 16, 13, verses 3 and 26, Deuteronomy 1, verse 1. What is here signified by El Paran, which is in the wilderness, cannot so well be explained, except in so far as to say that the Lord's first victory over the hells, signified by those nations, did not as yet extend any further. But how far it did extend is signified by El Paran in the wilderness. He to whom it has not been given to know celestial arcana may suppose that there was no need of the Lord's coming into the world to fight against the hells, and by means of temptations admitted into himself to vanquish and conquer them, when they might have been subjugated at any time by the divine omnipotence and shut up in their hells. But that still the fact is really so is a certain truth. To unfold the arcana themselves merely as to the most general things would fill a whole work, and it would also give occasion for reasonings about such divine mysteries as human minds would not comprehend, however fully they might be unfolded, and most people would not desire to comprehend them. Therefore it is sufficient for men to know, and because it is so, to believe that it is an eternal truth, that unless the Lord had come into the world and subjugated and conquered the hells by means of temptations admitted into himself, the human race would have perished, and that otherwise those who have been on this earth even from the time of the most ancient church could not possibly have been saved.